Welcome to GeoTalk, the podcast for geocaches down under. In this episode of GeoTalk, we talk to Canberra's most successful geocacher tank engine, meet some of the attendees at the Sydney Christmas barbecue event, and talk to Sue Wilson from Team Astro about her encounter with a Death Adder. All this and more on GeoTalk. Welcome to the fourth episode of GeoTalk and the last for 2006. It's now only a few days to Christmas, although if you've downloaded this about 3 or 4 days since it's been posted, then Christmas has come and gone. But whatever way you look at it, summer's certainly in full swing. Hopefully you've been making the most of the long days by geocaching in between Christmas shopping or watching Australia win the Ashes back in the cricket. I certainly had a bit of fun over the last weekend down in Canberra and swept up a huge number of new geocaches that have appeared since I moved to Sydney. A lot of planning went into the day, and despite her complaints, SuperNay30 was a great help in assisting me log 19 geocaches on the Sunday. I also completed 4 great puzzle caches from a new geocacher down in the ACT called Enowed. And even if you're not likely to make it to the ACT region anytime soon, I certainly recommend that you have a go at solving those puzzles at home. Thanks once again for the feedback over the past few shows. I received a comment from Joe on the GeoTalk blog about the snake interview, and I know I learnt a little bit about snakes while I was recording that interview, and hopefully many more of you learn a little bit as well. As a follow-up to that feature, you'll hear a telephone interview with Sue Wilson from Team Astro in South Australia about her encounter with a death adder last month. A new addition to the show is the GeoTalk quiz question. Now, there's no prize for this quiz, and I will reveal the answer at the end of the show, but the test will be for you to see if you can get the answer without looking it up on the web. So here's this episode's question. What was the first geocache hidden in Australia? And for a bonus point, what was its geocode? Good luck with that question. Well, without further ado, it's time to jump into GeoTalk with a geocacher profile. Well, we're joined now by one of the most famous geocachers in the ACT. He used to go by the name of Thomas S., but now goes by the name of Tank Engine. Welcome.
Thank you. And I've heard a couple of your talks, and yes, they're very nice. Proud to be interviewed.
Now, how did you start into geocaching?
Well, it was actually quite a long time ago. I'm into computers, amongst other things, I guess, is one of my hobbies, or has been. And in a computing magazine quite a few years ago, I saw an article about it. And I've been using GPS receivers, and I've been doing bushwalking before that, and I've been always interested in that. When I saw the article, I thought, well, that sounds interesting. But I don't know, I put it aside, and a few months later, I must have been bored at some stage, I got that magazine back out and decided, oh, there can't be any caches in the ACT, but checked anyway, and there was some there. And that's when I started. I thought I'd give it a go.
You just recently passed the 1,000 mark. How many caches are you up to now?
I think it's almost 1,048, I think.
You found everyone in the ACT. I mean, would you be the only one who's done that?
Mountain Biker Oz is very close. I think he's got one or two that he hasn't found, one of mine that he's having a bit of difficulty with, but he'll be there shortly.
Recently, I did a feature on looking at some of the caches in the ACT. What are some of your favourites in the region?
Oh, there's a lot of nice caches here, and I'd have to say some of Mountain Biker Oz's are my favourites, I think. Certainly his are what I would say are the harder ones, but I certainly enjoy the harder ones, the challenge of the puzzle and also the challenge of the, you know, the hike or the bicycle, mountain bike ride to get there. One I did very recently was 8-Ball, which was very memorable. It's a new one on the lake. Requires a bit of, a boat. And we went out there with, my daughter and I went out there with my inflatable boat. But it was very choppy that afternoon. But, you know, got to get that first to find. So out we went and we got soaking wet. and trying to keep the boat steady when we got near the location, and keep it from drifting, and keeping the GPS dry, and trying to fill out the log all at the same time. It was a lot of fun.
You seem to take your family out on quite a few adventures. What do your family think of geocaching?
Mostly they enjoy it, but they don't always enjoy it. They sometimes think I'm a little bit too dedicated. They certainly don't want to come out every time. But all things being well, they are happy to come out if they're in the mood. My son doesn't mind the odd longer walk. Bianca, my daughter, will try and is mostly keen to go out, but I can't take her on the harder ones. She's only six, so I take her on the easier ones, and of course she's always keen on the swaps.
You've been geocaching for a number of years now. What keeps you in the sport?
Oh, I guess the same thing that started it all, really. I mean, I've always enjoyed bushwalking. And I've always enjoyed technology and computers, I guess, and internet and all of that stuff put together. And this certainly gets me to do a lot more bushwalking. And it takes me to places that I haven't been to, or new and exciting places. And I've noticed lately a lot of sort of puzzle type cases, and I've always enjoyed puzzles as well. So it all comes together.
What sort of changes have you seen over the last number of years?
Certainly, in the ACT anyway, I think the caches are becoming better thought out in a way. I mean, at the beginning, it was mostly, find point, go to the point and find the box. And I certainly enjoy those caches, nothing against that. But I think there's been more multi-caches, more puzzle-type caches, and certainly some of the puzzles are becoming quite challenging now. Yes, I mean, if I go into state, I usually can't attempt those ones if I don't have time, but in the ACT I'm more than happy to spend a couple of hours trying to nut out the puzzle first.
Are there any downsides that to geocaching that you've experienced?
Well, I guess there's the occasional negative of having a cache muggled or destroyed or vandalised. Has happened from time to time. We've had episodes in the ACT where there seemed to be somebody out there with a mission to see how many caches they could annihilate, but those come and go. On the whole, it's been good. Yeah, occasional cache that gets a nasty note in it by some muggle that obviously doesn't understand what's going on. But get over that, and on the whole, it's good.
And where do you see yourself in the next few years? What have you got any goals that you'd like to achieve?
I certainly haven't set any goals. I'm happy to continue on, and whenever I get some spare time and whenever there's a new cache, then I'm happy to hunt it.
Well, it's been great speaking to you, Tank Engine, or Thomas, and all the best with your geocaching adventures.
Thank you.
Most people who live in Australia are familiar with the fact that this country hosts 7 of the top 10 most deadliest snakes in the world. Despite that fact, very few people in this country die from a snake bite. Sue Wilson from Team Astro was recently bitten by a death adder in the semi-rural area of the York Peninsula of South Australia. I spoke to Sue last week about her encounter and started by asking her about the events that led up to her injury.
I was actually on my way over to work at Millerton because I visit schools as part of my job. And Of course, I'd already been driving for about an hour and a half in the morning, and I thought, oh, I needed to, you know, do what ladies need to do sometimes. And so I stopped on the side of the road just around the tip of St. Vincent's Gulf to a tree there, and I thought I'd make a beeline behind that tree, and obviously other people have done the same too. And I needed to do it before all the trucks carrying grain to the silos went past. So, you know, I had my eye on the truck coming in the distance, and away I went. And I stepped over this. When graders grade the road, they leave that bit of a mound on the side, and I just stepped over that, and there was, you know, this wham into my foot, and I didn't even look because I had a job to do, and I was going to do it before that truck came, and it was a pain like I hadn't really felt before, and then it got a bit worse, and I kept thinking, I've got to check this out, and then I could actually feel like the inside of my shoe was wet. And I believe that it may have been blood, that I'd stepped on a piece of barbed wire or a piece of broken bottle or something that's gone into my shoe. And anyway, so I walked back on the same little track in amongst clumps of scrubby, salty bushes, and couldn't see anything at that spot where I'd been struck. There was no broken glass, no bottles, no box thorns, no syringes. And so I thought I'd better check it out in the car. And when I did, there was also no blood in my shoe, except it was wet. And I looked and there was a puncture mark, one puncture mark in the side of my foot. And then I thought, well, it must have been a box thorn. I'd better check the shoe to make sure it's not still in there. And that's when I saw the two fang marks together. And that's when I realised also that that was venom, the wetness in my shoe. I was wearing leather shoes at the time. A brown snake probably wouldn't have gotten through, been able to put their fangs through the leather shoe. Yeah, they were just soft leather joggers, and luckily one of the fangs went into the inner sole of the shoe, you know, the spongy part that you actually put your foot on. Yeah, and, you know, quite a bit of the venom would have gone into there. But given the location and the pack, you know, the punch of the, or the impact of the strike, and also the fact that it got through my shoe, that it all pointed to death. At one of the personalities of that snake, it tends to hide in the leaf litter, and it can strike. They're not very big snakes either, and they can actually strike a bird before they've even landed. So they pack quite a punch when they do actually strike.
I hope you don't mind me asking this, but I mean, one of the things that they always say is after a snake bite is to apply a compression bandage.
I didn't have one in the car. We have since put them in, but you know, we look at the probability of something happening or the likelihood of something happening over time, and there's been no, well, the last recorded death at a snake bite was about 30 years ago. That's in the wild. And so this was a bit of a thing, you know, and none of us had actually really even thought about it. And we all stop and go behind the bush or stop after a long trip and go for a walk or answer our mobile phones on the side of the road. And so it wasn't strange for us to stop, but it was, you know, we just didn't even have a compression bandage in the car in the first aid kit. So we do now.
After you arrived at Millerton, were you then transferred back to Adelaide?
Well, by the time they realised that it was probably death adder, given the width of my, you know, the width of the leather on my shoe, plus the width of the actual fang bites, and the fact that my blood was clotting quite normally, they realised, and the location of where it happened, they realised that it was death adder. So that was 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And then they said to me, we'll have to get you around back to Adelaide. But at that stage, it wasn't an emergency because I hadn't shown any signs of anything really. So I actually got my son to come across and pick me up and take me down to the Royal Adelaide where I spent the night, and was discharged at 10 o'clock the next day, which was 24 hours up.
So did you have antivenin?
No, none at all. And I think that's why... possibly why I've had some of these, you know, symptoms. There must have been a small amount of venom that actually got into my foot.
How's it been the last couple of weeks?
For about probably a week or so, I get some feeling up and down my left leg, but nothing to be, you know, worried about. The main worry was the fact that it felt like my head was disconnected from my body and that I could just let my head drop off. You know, it was a complete and absolute feeling of loss of balance, I guess. And one of the syndromes in the 24 hours after a snake bite is that you get this broken neck syndrome. And that's exactly how it felt for me these last few weeks.
4 weeks on and you're back at work, but you mentioned that you're still not feeling 100%.
No, I still have some of those symptoms. Particularly, and that's what I noticed in the first place. When I started to rush around a bit, that's when the symptoms first showed signs. And, you know, I tried to soldier on because I was told that after 24 hours you should be okay. However, it's, there must have been something that got in, like the neurotoxin, the little bit of venom that got in that's probably not really traceable, and yet it's reacted with me. Not enough to put me back in hospital, but enough to concern doctors that they've actually sent me off for brain scans and MRI scans just in case there is some other problem. But, of course, they're all coming back to be normal.
Have you been geocaching since?
Yes, I've been out with John a couple of times with Astro. And you're always just that little bit wary about putting your hands in spots you can't see, or, you know, using a stick if you can find one to uncover things. I wear my farm boots if we go out, and because they're blundstones and, you know, thick leather, so nothing can get through them.
And advice for people who are out in the bush or even in some of the suburban areas looking for caches?
Well, first of all, wear the appropriate footwear and jeans, so nice thick jeans and good strong footwear. Whether it be your joggers or if you want something better than that, get some blundstones. And the other thing would be, don't put your hand in something you can't see inside. So you use a stick to get to retrieve a cache if you can't see it, if it's too dark to see it. But don't put your hand into a spot because there's millions of snakes out this year. In fact, when I got back after the 15th on the Sunday night, I was actually watering my garden and I came back to go inside the house and I found a baby black snake wriggling around near the back door. So we got rid of that one.
Well, look, it's a terrible story, but I'm glad you're feeling good again and you're back to normal and you can share those experiences with us. Thanks very much, Sue.
Well, thank you. Thanks for giving me the chance to have a chat with you.
One of the great things about geocaching is meeting other geocachers. Some of us encounter each other as we race towards that first to find, while others may encounter each other while they're pretending that they're not looking for something until a GPS receiver in the hand gives away their intentions. Another way of meeting geocachers is at a geocaching event, and I took my recording mic to the Sydney Christmas barbecue event early this month at Breakfast Point in the inner west of Sydney and caught up with some of the local geocachers.
Hallo, mijn naam is Tanja en geocache is echt wel heel erg leuk. Dus ja. I'm Tanja. I'm part of the Antipodes team. And we actually started geocaching to get to know Sydney and the area a bit better because we moved here 2 years ago and we didn't know the area and figured, oh, yeah, would be nice. And Menno, my husband, has had read about it in the Netherlands already and he went like, oh, let's try this. Now we're here and they've got caches here and stuff. So, and I guess I like it because you're out in nature, you're discovering new things all the time and a bit of history along the way quite often as well. So it's just all around really interesting.
Hi, I'm David from the Rats. Enjoy caching because it's something crazy, something stupid. The wife might not think that, but kids love it, and they love all the little trinkets in the boxes. So, yeah, enjoy it.
How long have you been geocaching for?
2002, and this is my 900th find today.
Ian from Odie McPody. Yeah, enjoying this heaps. Get you out in the outdoors and that.
So, how long have you been geocaching for?
A couple of years now. Done about 260 odd caches. Not exactly sure on the numbers at the moment. But yeah, enjoy it all the time. Gets you to new places that you never get to before. Even areas like I lived all my life, get to find new spots that I've never even knew existed, even when they're just on your doorstep. It's good stuff.
What's your most favourite or memorable cache?
I could say the Rats one because he's a friend of mine and he's standing next to me, but I'd probably have to say Webby's Alien, I can't even think of the whole name.
Outpost.
Alien Outpost series. We were the first to find and did it all in the one night.
My name's Dick. I am one quarter of the Scenic Routers. We are at the barbecue and this is what we really enjoy about geocaching is meeting the other people. That's all I can think of. Would you need my wife to read?
I'm Big Matt from the South Coast. I've been geocaching for only about 2 months, and this is my 100th cache. It's great to be here.
And I'm the Mountain Goat from the South Coast. I've been going for about 18 months, and this is my 100th find.
We're Team Shifter Brains, and it's... my wife, myself, and my daughter make up the team. We've been geocaching for a little over 12 months. We love it. It takes us to places we'd never think of going and seeing things that we never thought we'd see. It's just been a...
So it gets us outdoors, bushwalking.
And do you have a memorable geocache, your favourite one?
Maxime Glass on the Central Coast.
What was it about that one?
Full of puzzles and about 6-7 waypoints. All took us about a week to do it.
It's so complicated, the sense of achievement you get from completing it. It was just the most memorable thing about it.
My name is Walter, and we actually started geocaching by getting booked in the Blue Mountains. And someone came along, pulled us out, and he happened to be a geocacher. Actually, they're booked right next to a geocache. Anyway, we started exploring ourselves, and we're quite into this hiding things and finding things, and it's a great sport. No, it's not a sport, it's a game. Our favorite was animal, mineral, and vegetable. Great engineering feat. It's more engineering than hiding. I mean, great hiding too, but I can recommend that to anybody.
Hello, I'm George from Ideology. We haven't been geocaching for a while. What we have been doing, though, is trying to provide tools and websites for all the caches out there. The data is owned by everybody, and we like to provide statistics, watch lists, tags, recommendations, all sorts of stuff for all the caches, so people can go out and find the ones that they really will enjoy.
And what's your favourite geocache that you've done?
I think it would be Play It Again, Sam, which is quite an old one now by today's standards. I'm not quite sure who would remember it, but it certainly got our Morse code skills improved to a level that we could read Morse code quicker than we could read the paper.
Or decipher the Rot 13.
Ah, yes, the old Rot 13s, yes. Well, I think everybody can read that as plain English now, can't they?
Hi, I'm Dave. And Wingnut is my caching name with my wife and my young daughter. We've been caching for about 2.5 years now. And what do I like about caching? I like to get outdoors, out into the fresh air, and I especially like some of the remote bush caches.
Anyone that stands out?
Probably one of my favourite caches was Cloudmaker, which is out on Mount Cloudmaker in the Canangra Boyd National Park.
Hi, I'm Tronador. And why do I like geocaching? Well, I love the outdoors. I like doing all things outside. And this activity, whatever you want to call it, I've just found some amazing places that I've lived here all my life, and I have just found places I've never known existed.
What would be one memorable one?
One of the best actual caches I've ever seen has got to be Kokoda. That blew me away when I saw that. The amount of effort and work that went into that cache. It's amazing what some people do.
We better not tell what sort of...
won't tell any more than that.
It's time to delve into the GeoTalk mailbag. I'm going to start off by mentioning the St. Louis Area Geocaching Podcast again, because what I forgot to mention last time was that in episode 46, there's an interview with Robert Leap, who's the person behind GPS Babble. Now, GPS Babble is the software that sits in the back of GSAC, or Geocaching Swiss Army Knife. And if you enjoyed the interview with Clyde E. in episodes 1 and 2, then you should have a listen to the St. Louis Area Geocaching Podcast and check that out. There's a link on the GeoTalk webpage. During the week, I received some funny emails from Bronze, and although I won't go into them in detail, he did want me to mention that there will be a geocaching event out at Dubbo in Western New South Wales on the 21st of January. Now, to find out more, visit the link on the GeoTalk blog at geotalk.libsyn.com or do a search in geocaching.com. Another event that's being held in January is on the weekend of the 13th up at the northern end of the Sunshine Coast at a place called Rainbow Beach. Now, the event is called the Queensland Geocachers Four-Wheel Drive New Year Beach Bash. It's quite a mouthful. It's being hosted by the Four Bears, and you can check it out on the geocaching.com website. It's a four-wheel drive only event, so if you don't have a four-wheel drive, you either need to hire one or get in touch with the Four Bears about getting a lift around the area and so forth. Next, I want to give a plug for GCA News, or Geocaching Australia News, which comes out quarterly. Now, the next issue is due out in late January, and if you're keen to be heard in the geocaching world, but you feel a little more comfortable typing rather than talking, send an article in to gcanews@mac.com before the middle of January, and that way you'll get your article in. Now, you can also download previous editions by following the links from the GCA News page on the Geocaching Australia Wiki. Now, if that's all too confusing, I'll give you a link for that as well. Now, finally, the quiz question that I gave you at the start of the show. What was the name of the first geocache placed in Australia, and what was its code? Well, the answer is Lane Cove, which obviously is in Lane Cove National Park in the lower northern suburbs of Sydney. It was placed there on the 18th of May 2000, and its code is GC3E. Now, it's no longer a traditional cache, but it is still a virtual cache, so you can go to that area, take a photo, and say you've been to where the first cache in Australia was. Well, that's it for Geo Talk for episode 4. Remember, if you've got any suggestions, questions, comments, or ideas, please email me, geotalk@mac.com, or post a note on the Geocaching Australia forums. Well, until the next episode of Geo Talk, have a happy new year and safe geocaching.
Designed a site to bring podcasting to geocachers.
Or is it geocaching to podcasters?
Well, anyway, if you've joined the podcasting revolution
and enjoy the hobby of geocaching,
have we got a site for you. Podcasher.
Podcasher.
Podcasher.com.
If you're a geocacher
or curious about this activity,
you'll want to log on to Podcasher.com.
Home of the Podcasher Podcast.
The podcast all about geocaching.
Geocaching news,
tips and tricks,
tools of the trade,
geocaching field tours,
and podcaches.
Hence the name of the site.
On certain shows, we'll give you audio clues that lead you to a hidden cache of treasure.
Well, trinkets, actually.
Yeah, but it's still fun to find.
Right.
Right.
So go to podcasher.com.
Podcasher, for the geocacher in all of us.